Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Carol Masser. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
The long and winding road.
No idea he was a fan. Michael Shaul. Yes, indeed. I didn't know you. See the things
Surprise.
You learn about yourself from our producer, Paul Brennan. Boy.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, Michael Shaul is the chairman of Market Field Asset Management. It's good to have you with us. Thanks for joining us in the studio. So, Michael, I was looking at the Dow and the S&P today, and I got to say, I was thinking in my mind, I thought, Dow 15,000, S&P at 1,700. Doesn't seem so far-fetched, or does it?
No, I mean, I still think this is a bull market, and I still think it will continue.
This year?
Yeah, I think this year. I mean, I do think that there are issues out there which don't have a lot to do with U.S. equities themselves but may end up affecting them. The two big negative issues you have right now are rising interest rates in the developed world and emerging market economies, which really are in a very, very difficult place with currencies falling apart in a number of them. Neither of them really have a great deal to do with corporate profitability in the United States, which ultimately is what I believe drives equity valuation. So, you know, I still think we're in the middle of this bull market. I still think the ultimate high for the S&P 500 will be comfortably above 1,700, given that we got there briefly earlier this year. I have no particular insight as to whether we got to go down before we can go up or we can go up before we go down.
So a pretty strong market. What about, though, you know, there are folks who come out and we talk about some of the economic data points, and there's some good ones, some bad ones. Is that just part of kind of a normal recovery in your view?
Yeah, and most of the good ones are really pretty good. I mean, the stuff you should, I think, really care about, like the ISM data, tells you there's a real acceleration of this economy. And I don't think people really understand this data. I mean, you know, when you start to get mid-50s ISM data 4 years into an economic recovery, that's meaningful acceleration. When you have new orders in the 60s 4 years into an economic
recovery.
Not too
bad, right?
No, it's really pretty powerful. And you know, I think you're going to see a whole bunch of metrics get themselves into blue sky territory, as they should in any economic cycle.
Michael, I was recently in California, and I looked out on the highway, and I kept thinking to myself, as long as gasoline stays at a reasonable level, meaning that people can afford it,
mm-hmm.
not saying that 4.5 or 5 or whatever the number is, but mm-hmm. that people can fill their tanks and get to where they've got to go, it's going to be okay. Why does it need to be more complicated when it comes to investing your money?
Well, because markets are volatile, and although I think...
Yeah, but a lot of people don't trade every day. I mean, no, you can't just and say, United States, the price of gasoline in the United States is lower than just about any other developed country in the world, bar, let's say, those members of OPEC that subsidize their gasoline.
Yeah, I don't think you can invest simply off the price of gasoline, but I think Dave Wilson section had a good point. Okay, it's been a great bull market, but you do still have to be in the right parts of bull markets. And I think for the rest of this bull market, you know, you would expect towards the end of it, the S&P to really get quite picky about the sectors that it likes and leave behind the sectors that it doesn't like.
So you don't believe in this market correlation stuff, the fact that most assets move in lockstep, whether they're equities, bonds, I mean,
commodities.
Overall, over a long period of time, you take a look at those smoothed out numbers. You say, look, I can't pick the one stock in the haystack. I've got to go with something broader than that.
Well, I think over the very long term, the inflationary pressures out there mean that most asset prices go up. But no, I couldn't be further away from, you know, believing that. No, I think every cycle has assets you want to own and assets you want to avoid. Bear markets come and go. You know, indexes may look as if they survive, but the individual members of indexes disappear along the way. So no, I think that I don't think you have to be as active as a day trader in order to invest successfully over the course of a cycle. But you know, you do actually have to be awake.
Michael, what about the thinking out there that this market cycle and recovery, whether it's the economic one or more specifically the market one, has kind of gotten a little bit long in the tooth, and that we, you know, if you base it or compare it with past market cycles, does that matter to you?
No, what really matters is when a cycle gets long in the tooth, it's because it looks long in the tooth. I mean, there were dogs who lived to 6, there were dogs who lived to 16. I'm sure there's an average age of a dog out there. You know, ours is 12, and he's probably got a little bit longer to go by the looks of things. So, you know, you look at the market, you look at how it's responding, you look at how people are investing in it, and you look at monetary policy. And monetary policy in the entire developed world is incredibly market-friendly. And even if the Fed eventually tapers whenever it feels like
it's
doing
still
so.
Still going to be
ridiculously loose. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem that you have right now, and this gets back to Pim's questions, is monetary policy is going to remain equity friendly for the foreseeable future. But I believe already monetary policy is antagonistic towards the bond market. And I think that's a big misconception people have out there.
Our guest at this hour, Michael Shaul, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer at Marketfield Asset Management. They've got about $9.5 billion in assets under management. Hey, Michael, if I look at the groups in the S&P 500 that have done really well this year, it's healthcare, consumer discretionary, financials, your industrials. Is that where you want to be, or is that not where you want to be?
I think the industrials are good, and I think the financials are good. I never really understand healthcare. I mean, I don't think it's a bad place.
Isn't your wife a doctor?
She is. So I sort of hand over all the decisions to her. I do think what I mean by that is I'm a macro guy, and I think to invest in healthcare, you've really got to have a better understanding of some of the bottom up forces than I think we really have at Marketfield. So we don't typically own a lot of healthcare stocks.
And consumer discretionary?
I think that's still been good. I mean, that's been one of the big winners since the beginning of the bull market.
What would you be selling?
I would be selling bonds and bond proxies, and we have been, frankly, for a number of months. I mean, for bonds, interest rates have been moving steadily higher. And as I said just before the break, we actually believe current Fed policy is now actually damaging the bond market, even as they're trying to help it. But I do think the market is beginning to smell the beginning of inflationary pressures out there, which is pretty bad news for interest rates, given that they remain at historically low levels. And the one part of the market that we
meaning felt, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, I think that we're at the beginning of a bond bear market. I think this is the initial move, and when the history books write about the bond market of 2013 to 2022 or whenever it's over, they'll say it started in May of 2013. Maybe they'll even say it started at the end of 2012 because, interest rates were really creeping higher for the first 5 months of the year without anybody paying attention to it. And I do think the one part of the equity market that got quite expensive earlier this year were some of these very defensive names without significant growth prospects with relatively high dividends. And that's where you sort of looked at PE multiples and said, yeah, it's hard to really defend that. So that I would be selling bond proxies.
As someone that comes into contact with investors and potential investors, are the people that invest in stocks the same individuals that invest in bonds?
Well, I think yes and no. I think by 2012, everybody invested in bonds. And I think in 2000, nobody invested in bonds. So over the course of those 12 years, there was a huge migration of capital away from the equity market towards the bond market. Now, remember, I mostly deal with wealth managers and institutions who by nature have a foot in both camps. But certainly the foot they have in the bond market is significantly larger than it was in, say, 2000. And the foot they have in the equity market shrank, partly because of bond allocations and partly because of alternative allocations.
Is there a level of interest rates where they start to buy bonds again because they have to be able to plan? If you are an institution, you've got liabilities in the future that you have to match against your current assets and your income stream. When do they start buying?
Well, if we are right, and this is the beginning of a long bond bear market, there will be several buying opportunities along the way, which will turn into selling opportunities. I mean, that's the nature that one of these things happens. I would think with the economy where it is right now, if, say, the 10-year got to 3.5, it would probably be worth buying. But I would still expect a few years down the road for interest rates to be somewhat higher than 3.5%. I think what you've created now is a sort of a reservoir of bond ownership, which is as excessive as it was in equities in 2000, and it took many years to really get equity participation down to a ridiculously low level. It took 8-9 years, to get equity participation down to the sort of level that you've allowed this kind of a bull market to take place. I mean, these sorts of reallocation waves play out over many, many years. And most of the big allocation shifts take place after people have lost a lot of money, not in anticipation of it.
Well, and it's interesting. We often talk about all the hedge fund money and various institutional investors, too, who are kind of still waiting to kind of come into the market, and even retail investors. Is that part of what kind of keeps the momentum going?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the latecomers are the main force behind the end of any bull market. And that tends to be really a very powerful,
Because it's a lot.
It's a lot, and it's very much one way, and it's buying a limited portion of the S&P 500. So the whole index goes up, but the stuff they're buying goes up a ton. Again, if we went back to Exxon and energy, 2000.